expressed on this program are those of the hosts and their guests, and not of Blue Sky Broadcasting.
Hey, everybody. My name is Barbara, and it is my privilege to welcome you into the program today and to welcome the mayor of Sandpoint, Shelby Ronstadt. And importantly, Mayor Shelby is a candidate for the nomination for governor coming up in 2022. He's seeking that nomination. And so all you guys, you know, we all get to vote in the primary. He ran for mayor. Some of you up there in Boundary County couldn't vote, but now you get a chance. So this is an opportunity for you to get to know him. Keep it right here today and every Tuesday as we endeavor to keep you informed. So we're going to be right back.
Here's your chance. You could win one of five sets of season tickets to the 2022 Numerica Credit Union Concert Series at the Gorge.
Tennessee Whiskey.
Visit LiveNation.com/Numerica for details on how you can see Chris Stapleton's All-American Roadshow. Brandi Carlile Beyond These Silent Days Tour. Jack Johnson, and so many others, all part of the 2022 Numerica Credit Union Concert Series at the Gorge. Voted one of the best outdoor venues in America, and Numerica wants you to have season seats. Visit LiveNation.com/Numerica to view all the concerts, enter the giveaway, and get ready to return to live.
Where'd all the good people go?
Giving back during the holidays has never been easier. Just get the best internet in town. When you order Ting Internet, we'll make a donation on your behalf to a local food bank. And for a limited time, you'll get free standard installation and a free router with every order. In short, you'll get what we give. And we wouldn't have it any other way. Save big on internet you and your family will love by switching to Ting. Go to tinginternet.com/giving. That's tinginternet.com/giving.
BF Quick Lube at the top of the South Hill does more than just lubes and oil changes. They do them quick. Just stop by or call and make an appointment at 208-267-7481. Along with regular maintenance, BF Quick Lube can handle most of your other auto repairs. BF Quick Lube would like to take this time to say thank you to each of their customers for putting their trust and support in their services year after year. For a quick lube and oil change and so much more, visit your friends at BF Quick Lube on the South Hill in Bonner's Ferry.
If you talk, your neighbor will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So don't they hear you? You can do it if you try.
97.1 FM is North Idaho's radio.
All right, everyone, we are back and we are with Mayor Shelby Ronstadt, who is candidate for governor. Mayor Shelby, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Barbara, and good afternoon to all your listeners out there. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you. You know, is it just me, but I'm thinking from mayor to governor, that's a big jump with nothing kind of in between. So let's begin with why you want to be governor in the state of Idaho.
Sure. And let me kind of answer your assumption there, because I've heard that before. And it actually is a pretty natural jump because a mayor is an executive administrator for the city. And the governor is an executive administrator for the state. So in terms of roles and responsibilities, duties of the office, they're actually really similar. Obviously, the governor's office is more complex. There's a lot more, it's a much larger budget, a lot more employees, divisions within state government, but effectively it's the same type of role, which is quite different than being a legislator. And I would say that a city council person is much more akin to being a state legislator because they are the legislative body. And so in that regard, I understand that it's a common path to the governor's seat that a potential candidate will serve in the state legislature for a period of time. That's a common path, but it's not the only path.
You know, I think the idea is, the proverbial starting off in the mailroom and working your way up, that you get cross-training, even though you may not end up there or even need to be there with your skill set. So why are you running for governor?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the question. I've lived in Idaho my entire life. I'm a fourth-generation Idahoan. I grew up in Lewiston. My great-grandfather started Ronstadt's Insurance way back in the day there. And, I grew up in a conservative family, and I've just seen such rapid and dramatic change in Idaho over my lifetime, and particularly in the last 5 or 10 years, I would say. Obviously, we're experiencing tremendous growth here in the state, across the state, and certainly we see that here in North Idaho in particular. And with that growth comes a lot of change. And I'm concerned about the direction that Idaho is going with this large influx of newcomers. It really has changed the dynamics, both economically as well as socially and culturally here in Idaho, in North Idaho in particular. And that concerns me. And I would really like to see Idaho return to more the traditional values that we've long held, values like family, community, things that I think have been taken for granted with the rise in extremism that we see overtaking our state right now, and frankly, I think overtaking both the Republican and the Democratic Party to a significant degree. And so these are issues that I'm deeply concerned about. There have been actions that have come out of the state legislature in particular over the last couple of sessions that are concerning to me. Most notably, I would say the amendment to the Democratic Initiative process that came out of the legislature last session and was signed by Governor Little, that was a direct assault on our democratic process here in Idaho.
The initiative process.
That's right. That's right. It would have effectively rendered our initiative process impassable or unfunctional. It was unanimously rejected by the Idaho Supreme Court, which, mind you, this is a very conservative Supreme Court in Idaho, unanimously rejected that amendment. And in fact, they called that action, that amendment, tyrannical, which I thought was really noteworthy. To hear that kind of summary judgment from the Supreme Court is a powerful statement.
So, Shelby, you grew up conservative. I'm not sure what that means in terms of your family through the generations, but do you consider yourself to still be a conservative?
Yeah, well, certainly there's a lot of values that I share that I think would be considered traditional conservative values, Idaho values.
Such as?
Well, like I say, family, right?
What about family, though? I mean...
Yeah. So when we value family, you know, we look out for our family. We look out for the well-being of our family. We safeguard public health and safety of our kids. We look out and try to create as much opportunity for prosperity and well-being for our kids and for our progeny going forward. For me, a big part of this is education. 74% of Idahoans think that education should be the top priority for the state of Idaho. That's a lot. That's a big number. That's more than all the Republicans in Idaho combined. So clearly, Democrats have made education a priority in their platform across the state for a long time, but so have many, many Republicans. And you don't get to a number like that without everybody being on the same page. And I think that certainly education, valuing education, investing in education is a way to promote not just the prosperity of our families going forward, create opportunities for our kids in the future, but it's a way to ensure that our businesses can continue to thrive and provide the level of service that, that is expected of them and that is profitable.
I'm sure you know from being in city council meetings or even just meetings that are not public but discussions in the office that, as the old saying goes, the devil is in the details. But really, I like, you know, we can just get into the weeds with the details. So when you talk about your concern, one of the things about family is protecting the public health and safety of our kids. What does that mean? I know everybody out there wants me to ask you, does that mean mask or vaccination mandates, or does it mean just recommendations, or does it mean something else to you? What does it mean? Just give me a couple of examples of how that would play out in detail.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to give you any policy recommendations today, but I will say that it definitely means protecting public health and safety of our kids and our community. And so that means, you know, with regards to, let's say we're in a global pandemic, for instance, it would mean following the best medical advice that the best information and the best medical advice that that we can develop and in order to make a decision to protect the most number of people possible.
I know so, everybody out there listening wants you to be more, they want to know specifically rather than these.
Sure.
You know.
So, yeah. And so what I would say is I would definitely encourage people to get the vaccine if they haven't gotten the vaccine. The best protection that we have is to get fully vaccinated against the coronavirus. So I absolutely advocate that, and I will continue to advocate for that. I understand that, you know, there's a lot of
vaccine. The mandate, though. I mean, getting the vaccine.
Can I finish my sentence?
Yes, of course.
Thanks.
You can. Sorry.
So, you know, obviously, I understand there's a lot of vaccine hesitancy out there, and I understand where a lot of those fears come from. But concerning to me is the amount of misinformation that's out there. There's a tremendous amount of misinformation out there, which is very concerning to me. And that's actually used against us and weaponized, not just by elements. You know, I think it's, you know, often out of ignorance, you know, that happens at kind of a local level. But we're really to a large degree, manipulated by other countries and other entities, actually, that are very interested in making things difficult for the United States. And it's unfortunate right now that I think a lot of the misinformation around COVID has been weaponized and used against us to create civil discord and political discord that weakens our country. And that's something that very much concerns me.
I want to get to, before we go to education, and you may list education in your next answer, but I'd like to get a feel for, and even if this is a repeat, as governor, you know, there's going to be a whole array of issues that are going to come through the legislature where your opinion will be sought or your approval or your veto. What are perhaps the top two or three issues that, as governor, you really want to see happen?
Education, access to housing and affordability, and that includes fair property taxes for property owners across the state. I think that's one area where the legislature has really failed Idahoans. Property taxes are too high, housing is too expensive, and it's inaccessible, particularly for working families that are middle class and can no longer afford to even, let alone, you know, buy a starter home, but even pay for rent in communities like Sandpoint or Ponderay or Dover.
As mayor, then, taking it back to the mayor, what have you done, or you and the city council together, obviously, and the commissions that give advice, what have you done to provide or promote affordable housing and lower taxes in Sandpoint?
Yeah, fair question. Well, with regard to housing, I created a housing task force. It's a new initiative that I kicked off in August. And, you know, this has traditionally not been a function of local government historically. So Sandpoint hasn't really had a role in that. In fact, frankly, the state of Idaho hasn't really had much of a role in that. And that's part of my criticism of the current governor, actually, is I think Idaho needs to take a much more active role in housing right now. And so what we're doing with the task force is I've mobilized local business leaders as well as non-government entities, local government entities, including local mayors, Bonner County Commissioner, as well as other members of the community that are concerned about this issue. Mostly this group is composed of business owners, and that was very strategic on my part, thinking that this is an issue that, yes, of course it impacts working families, of course it impacts local families, but it also very much impacts local business. And businesses, I think, really for the first time are experiencing how difficult it is to not just attract but retain existing workforce because the housing problem has gotten so far out of control. It's difficult for an employer like a Lighthouse or a Daher or a teacher at the school district to locate to in a place like Sandpoint, moving from perhaps out of state or out of the community, because they can't find either a place to rent or a place to purchase
that they can afford.
But that they can afford, exactly. And it really is a dual problem. Both of those are a problem. We actually do have an inventory problem, and that's part of the price problem, is that there simply are not enough units available. There's too much demand for the supply that's available. That also exacerbates the price, right? So it is both a price issue as well as an availability issue.
Right. I know a lot of people are wondering how, you know, the condos at the corner of whatever it is, it's 5th and Cedar, starting it. I think they put it right under $1 million just so they didn't have to put that $1 million, but it starts at $999, something like that. How did that get approved within a framework of needing affordable housing?
Yeah. Well, you know, certainly, you know, we have private property rights, and, you know, certainly Idahoans value their private property rights. So, you know, of course, a building owner, a property owner has the right to build what they want to build so long as it meets the standards of the building code and as well as the zoning code. So we have, and that whole process is developed through a community review process whereby we develop what's called the Comprehensive Land Use Plan, and that is the guiding document that really creates the vision for how Sandpoint wants to grow, say 20, 30 years into the future. And from that guiding document, the city develops its land use or zoning code. And all of that process is a very public process. It's as I said, it's a community-driven process, meaning that everybody gets to weigh in on what you know, where we want to go, right? So through that we've developed our land use codes, and that development meets the standard. It meets the law. So that property owner has the right to build what they deem to be the highest and best use for that property. So do we want to say, you know, maybe it seems like the implication of your question is, since we have an affordable housing problem, that we shouldn't allow people to build, you know, expensive condos.
Not really. My question is housed in you being governor and now mayor, and how you said one of your top priorities as governor is going to be affordable housing. And I mean, we have private land use and commissions and planning and zoning, you know, and people have the right to do this, which I agree with, then I'm not sure what you can do as or have done as mayor or can do as governor.
So let me address that part of the question.
Okay.
I appreciate that. So, yeah, we certainly want to enable people to build what they want to build and to realize the highest and best use for their property. But we also want to encourage development of housing that is what would be considered below market. that's not the $1 million condo, right? That's not the $1 million single family home with the white picket fence. So the way that we do that is by providing incentives. We have to provide an incentive that is attractive to a developer to want to consider an alternative way of doing something. And those incentives can look a variety of different ways. But one of the ways that they can look, one of the kinds of incentives that the city can provide, for instance, is to provide what's called a density bonus. So let's say, for instance, that example that you brought up with that building on 5th and Cedar, perhaps by code, that developer could build, and I'm just pulling this out of a hat, let's say 10 units. So a development bonus could look like, well, if you meet these certain standards, which means that some of the housing that you're building will be dedicated for Sandpoint's workforce housing, then we'll give you a bonus of, let's say, 4 units. And these are hypothetical numbers, but I'm just trying to convey the point, right? So a developer could get an incentive bonus like that. If the developer has more units to sell, then they can be sold at a lower price, thereby lowering the market price. So that's one concept. Another thing that the city can do, and yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we're over on a time for break, and I'm going to give you my next question that dovetails with what you're talking about, is that these incentives, because, you know, this is not a new concept. I mean, you know, businesses are given incentives. You know, what was the company that DeSantis wanted in Florida? In-N-Out Burger. I think he wanted to move from California to Florida, and he was offering all kinds of incentives. But anyway, so it's not a new concept. But what incentives have you offered as mayor over these years that you've been mayor that have incentivized, you know, affordable housing? And I'm going to give you that question. We're going to take a break right now. We'll be right back, everybody.
It's time to celebrate the winter solstice full moon gathering at the Granary District between Evans Brothers and Matchwood on Saturday from 4 to 10 p.m. There's dance performances, live music, DJ music, dancing, food, and more. The Winter Solstice Full Moon Gathering is brought to you in part by Maddox Farms Productions, Embody Healing Arts, Mountain West Bank, Misty Mountain Furniture, Creative Edge Design, Mount Baldy Dental, Eureka Institute, and Blue Sky Broadcasting.
Happy holidays from your friends at Super One Foods in Sandpoint. Stop by for all your holiday needs or save time and shop online. Then set the time to pick up your items at the store in one of the reserved parking spaces, or you can have them delivered right to your home. Go to superone.net to see just how easy it is. Looking for a great job? Sandpoint Super One is now hiring. Some positions start at $18 an hour. Sandpoint Super One.
You win when you work at Coeur d'Alene Casino. We're hiring across all departments at our premier casino resort in Worley, Idaho. Our team members enjoy competitive wages and great benefits, including 100% paid medical, vision, and dental, free meals during work shifts, paid time off, holiday bonuses, 401k, wellness programs, and more. Visit cdacasino.com to apply today. Coeur d'Alene Casino, welcome home.
What is your name?
Stanton Carlisle.
Can you read minds?
Yes, I can.
From director Guillermo del Toro.
What do I want?
To be found out, same as everybody else.
This Friday.
Are you in contact with the beyond?
Yes, I am.
We've had our share of snake charmers. We deal with them.
If you displease the right people, the world closes in on you very fast.
Bradley Cooper, Kate Blanchett, Rooney Mara.
You're going to find out what's coming to you.
Nightmare Alley. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without an adult. Only in theaters Friday.
ADHD. It's the child who can't pay attention or sit still in school, right? The answer may be yes. Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, can be complicated and it can last a lifetime. Living with a condition can sometimes be a challenge. It may take years to accept a formal diagnosis, and it's not always easy to find the right treatment plan. Did you know that up to 75% of children and adolescents with ADHD have at least one additional mental health condition that also requires a comprehensive approach to treatment? ADHD guidelines were recently updated to reflect the need to screen for associated disorders. be sure to talk with your child's doctor about proper screening. And visit moretoadhd.com for additional information. That's moretoadhd.com. This message has been brought to you in partnership with ADA, ACO, and CHAD.
Listen live anytime, anywhere with our new website, NorthIdahoRadio.com.
All right, everyone, welcome back in. I hope you're enjoying the interview today with Mayor Shelby Ronstadt. He is Sandpoint Mayor, and he is thrown his hat in the ring for the Democrat nomination for governor in the state of Idaho. And his name will be on the primary ballot. And if he is successful at that level, then he will move on to the general election for everyone to get to vote on in November. So we're talking about your top issues as governor. You've indicated housing. And my question for you before the break was, in relation to incentives, what incentives have you provided and proposed as mayor for Sandpoint in our housing issue? Because our housing issue is not new. Sandpoint's always been, you know, you could always get a better deal in Coeur d'Alene and Bonner's Ferry than Sandpoint. There's just something about that lake and the ski hill, the way it all works in Sandpoint. So what have you done for incentives?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This has been an issue that's, you know, been an important issue for our area for a long time. And obviously it's continuing to become even more of an important issue. I was actually part of the steering committee for the original comprehensive land use plan that was passed in 2009. So after that, I served on the Planning and Zoning Commission and then ultimately on City Council. So I was very instrumental in developing the land use plan that we have today, as well as the zoning code that we're living with at the City of Sandpoint currently. And a couple of the most significant There were a few things that were really significant changes to the 2009 comprehensive plan that were really new for Sandpoint. And one was allowing accessory dwelling units, or ADUs as they're commonly called, by right. That was something that wasn't allowed in the single family neighborhoods historically.
So that's like letting your garage have an apartment over it.
Exactly.
And you could rent it long term or short term.
Yep. Yeah. And that's great, not just because it creates more sort of smaller, more affordable housing options, but it's great for property owners too, right? Because then they can create more value in their property and create a secondary income.
How many units have been added as a result of that allowance?
About 100. Yeah. So, which is, you know, that's great. And I think I would expect that, you know, every year we have more, and I would expect to see that continue. I would also expect to see the regulations that regulate how those are built, see those loosened up a little bit going forward to encourage them more. And again, these comes back to incentives, right? So if we can make these regulations more flexible, then it's more inviting to other property owners to be able to take advantage of that.
Okay, so that's one incentive, to be able to rent out your garage or I like a mother-in-law apartment.
Yep. Another example is encouraging residential above and behind commercial areas. So historically, we've always kind of treated our commercial buildings and our residential buildings separately. And so with the 2009 plan, we really tried to create an active commercial zone where we would encourage development either above commercial or behind a commercial storefront. And that encourages density, but it also, so it creates more housing options, but it also really activates your downtown area, your commercial areas, because now you've got people that live in and amongst the commercial areas. So you've got a more active streetscape, more people, you know, potentially shopping and, you know, eyes in the storefront windows and that kind of thing.
Of course, so that's, unless it's affordable, I mean, location, 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 you know, that's what they advertise. You're walking distance to, it used to be walking distance to Ivano's, and we've said goodbye to Ivano's, but walking distance to downtown Sandpoint has always been a money maker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that there is definitely value in that, and people charge for it and people pay for it. And I would say maybe the most significant thing that we've done, and this is more recent, in 2017, Sandpoint passed the first short-term rental ordinance in the state of Idaho, and is really a model, especially for Idaho, but even across the nation. And this was after the legislature determined that renting out your own home is a private property right and should be protected as such. And so but the city determined that that we certainly are charged with being able to protect the public health and safety of our communities, and recognizing that when we lose an entire neighborhood to short-term rentals, it really changes the whole character of that neighborhood, including the, you know, public health and safety. Because what can happen is a neighborhood can be overrun with, you know, cars on the streets and trash and, you know, loud parties at night, you know, yeah, things like that, right?
You know, the other thing too, let me just interject, because mm-hmm. this is something that I think is a big problem. The B&B, the Airbnbs, and being able to rent out your home to short-term tourists, nothing against tourists, but just weekenders and week. They don't go to the meetings. They don't give food to the Boy Scouts. They don't take extra canned goods to the food bank. They are not really members of the community. And Shelby, I'm going to say 25 years ago, there was a big meeting up on Schweitzer where I can't remember the name of it, but the idea was don't let Sandpoint become another Sun Valley or Vail, where everybody flies in and they have their exclusive time and then they fly out and they're getting their hair cut someplace else. Mm-hmm. They are not supporting things in this neighborhood. I think that's a huge issue, and allowing people kind of Airbnb is, incentivizes that kind of a relationship with your people. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. That's a really good point. And we certainly recognize that problem, and we saw how those that, you know, being overtaken by short-term rental companies was hurting other communities, particularly resort communities like Sandpoint, that have amenities like the lake and the ski hill. So we knew that we had to do something to curb this trend and to try to get control of it, because what happens too, Barbara, is once those homes are rented as short-term rentals, which is tends to be more profitable than long-term rentals, which is why that change is happening, we have limited inventory here for housing, right? We only have about 4,000 homes in Sandpoint. So if we lose, a significant proportion of those homes to short-term rentals, that means that there's families that are not living here that would otherwise be living here.
So how, and those are the families. So how have you stopped that trend or controlled it?
So we created an ordinance in 2017 that limits the number of short-term rentals within the residential neighborhoods. So Sandpoint will allow 35 short-term rentals within our residential neighborhoods.
What does that mean? I mean, what's considered a neighborhood? Like X number of blocks, or?
Yeah. So we have two residential zones in our city. We have the single family zone, and it's dispersed throughout the city. There's, South Sandpoint, generally speaking, you have an image of South Sandpoint. It's mostly single family homes, right? So that's a single family neighborhood.
The Lincoln neighborhood. So 35 in that neighborhood.
No, I'm saying 35 in the entire city.
Okay.
In all of the residential zones.
Okay. And
then so that includes all of Central Sandpoint, which is basically between, west of Boyer is probably the easiest way to think of it.
35 then in multifamilies?
35 total in multifamily and single family.
Okay.
Okay. So which is, I can't tell you how many units that is, but it's quite a few out of, somewhere in the neighborhood of, 3,500 units.
Well, if it's 4,000 total, you're allowing 70, if I'm understanding.
No, 35.
35. Oh.
So, but there, here's the caveat, is that we allow them by right in commercial zones. So if you own a commercial property downtown or wherever, those those, you know, are unlimited. You can use those for short-term rentals. And that is working remarkably well for us. And that's going a long way to protecting our existing inventory and preserving it for families that live and work here.
Yeah. And I think that's a good thing. That doesn't really do much for the housing of affordable housing or new housing that's affordable. I want to kind of move on. You know, I'm excited, Shelby, because I am going to interview Superintendent Tom Albertson next week on Lake Pendre School District. You've said education is one of your big deals, if I can just call it that, in as governor. And so I've got some quick button issues. We're at break time, but let me get a few of these in. And if Superintendent Albertson is listening, he's probably going to get some of these questions too. But do you believe there's been a lot of talk by parents at school board meetings, and as governor, this has got to be important to you, that CRT is or is not being somehow presented in some way, shape, and form in our schools? Do you believe that? Have you seen it, or what do you think? Real quick.
I haven't seen it, and I don't believe it.
Do you believe that parents have the right to attend, to go into a classroom, of course, make arrangements for it, and they can't be there every day and whatever, but for parents to actually be able to sit in on some schedule in classrooms and see what's going on in there?
Yeah, on principle, that seems to make sense, but that's the kind of thing I would want to consult with leadership at the school, you know, the superintendent, the principals, the teachers.
But you know, concept, does it make sense to you as a parent, as someone who has friends who are parents with kids in school?
Yeah, I suppose that it does. But like I say, I would want to talk with the professionals who are in that role, who are much more familiar with the needs of both the students, the teachers, the protocols, you know, health and safety, all those things that they think about every day, that they deal with every day, that I'm an outsider looking in and I don't really know what they're dealing with, right? So I'm going to trust the professionals that are in that role to know what works and what doesn't, and what's best for the students, for the learning environment, for the teachers, et cetera.
So you've got me back to the mask mandate, and I know that this is like 2 years ago, this wouldn't even have come up. But the issue is mandate. Whether we have the freedom of choice to, like, neither you or I are wearing a mask today. And that's our choice. If you had walked in today with a mask, I would have been totally cool with that, obviously. Or even if you had said, Barbara, I'd be more comfortable if you wore a mask, I'd wear a mask for you. But the issue is the mandate. So I want to ask you real quickly again, we're going late here. Do you believe that mask or vaccine mandates, let me just narrow it for you, are appropriate for students in schools under the age of 18, A, and with or without parental consent? Because that has become an issue.
Yeah, that's a difficult issue. You know, again, this is something where I would rely heavily on both my healthcare, our healthcare professionals in the state that are experts in this area. And
given
and
what you know, I mean, we're 2 years in.
Let me finish.
I know, but we're 2 years in, so you must have an opinion. We do have science on this, so.
Yeah, so I would very much encourage. Of course, vaccines is step one, and you know I would be wearing a mask right now if I wasn't fully vaccinated, and that's been my practice, historically. So, and I think also, you know, I think where it gets particularly difficult is with, let me tell you a personal story. I personalize this a little bit because I have a 12-year-old and a 9-year-old, and our 12-year-old was fully vaccinated, and only recently is our 8-year-old fully vaccinated since the vaccine was accommodated for younger children. And so we had our younger daughter wearing a mask at school every day until she was fully vaccinated. And I think that makes the most sense. When you're asking the question about mandates, and I think in the state of Idaho, I mean, I think Idahoans have made it pretty clear that mandates are not appropriate for Idaho, for Idahoans. And, you know, I think the unfortunate part of that is, you know, I also do feel that we owe a responsibility to each other to be able to protect public health and to protect each other from you know, potentially getting infected and putting our lives at risk. So that, you know, both are true. We both are responsible to one another and need to make decisions that encourage you know, best practices in terms of public health. But you know, I think the bigger issue for me is that is this the misinformation campaign that is happening right now, where there's a lot more disinformation and misinformation about the science, both in terms of masking as well as the vaccines. And I think that poses a far bigger threat to the health of our society, the health of our citizens than any mandate.
All right. We are up against that break. We're going to take it right now. Don't go anywhere. We've got some more just for you.
Here's your chance. You could win one of five sets of season tickets to the 2022 Numerica Credit Union Concert Series at the Gorge.
Tennessee whiskey.
Visit LiveNation.com/Numerica for details on how you can see Chris Stapleton's All-American Roadshow. Brandi Carlile Beyond These Silent Days Tour. Jack Johnson, and so many others, all part of the 2022 Numerica Credit Union Concert Series at the Gorge. Voted one of the best outdoor venues in America, and Numerica wants you to have season seats. Visit LiveNation.com/Numerica to view all the concerts, enter the giveaway, and get ready to return to live.
Where all the good people go?
Hi, Jim Parker and Sonny at Parker Subaru. We have a huge selection of great Subaru vehicles in every color and model that are ideal during bad weather driving in the Northwest. A Parker Subaru has the excellent symmetrical all-wheel drive system capable of taking you through difficult terrain. They have higher ground clearance with additional protective body paneling to help reduce sand and salt corrosion that plagues vehicles in the winter.
Outbacks, Crosstrek, Foresters, and the Subaru Legacy deliver all-weather grip and handling. With symmetrical all-wheel drive, Subaru gives you the capability to escape no matter the season or destination.
Subaru vehicles are well known for long-lasting reliability and rigorous safety standards. Plus, there's our unique, no-problem way of doing business.
Every new car sold during the Subaru Share the Love event, Subaru will donate $250 to purchaser or lessee selected national and hometown charities. See Parker Subaru or Subaru.com for details.
For sales or service, visit us on the web at ParkerSubaru.com or at our beautiful dealership, Parker Subaru, Highway 95 in Dalton, in Coeur d'Alene.
If you're talking, they will hear you.
We all want our kids to grow up safe and healthy. So we show them how. And we tell them, with honest conversations that let them know what we expect. Not just one time, but every chance we get. That's especially important when it comes to alcohol and other drugs. Kids not only need to know the dangers and how to avoid them, they need to hear it often from you. And when it comes to pain medications, opioids, they need to know that they should never be taken without a prescription and never shared with friends or family. It's dangerous and illegal. So, talk with your kids and guide them through the challenges of growing up safe and healthy. Because when you talk, they hear you. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
So don't they hear you? You can do it if you try.
North Idaho's Radio, 1400, 1450 AM and 97.1 FM.
Oh my gosh, you guys, can you say, is it too cliche to say time flies? This has been very interesting for me. I hope it's been interesting for you, an opportunity, because I think there are a lot of you out there that don't know Mayor Shelby Ronstadt. And hopefully this is an opportunity for you to see him and to hear him and to really take your measure of this candidate for governor in Idaho. So we've got time for probably one big question, given your answers are are involved, and that is, I've always seen the governor as like a watchman for the state, and that the rights of the state supersede the federal government, as whatever has been given to the federal government, and that you as governor would be our watchman to not let the federal government illegally or inappropriately run over us as a state. How do you see that? What has been your thinking through the years on that aspect of the governor's role?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, clearly states have significant, you know, authority and independence, independent of the federal government. You know, also worth noting that Idaho has more public lands per area than any other state in the nation.
63% of our land is controlled by the federal government.
Yeah, it's huge. And you see it up here. I mean, we see it firsthand up here. I think it's more like 73% in Bonner County, right? We're surrounded by federal lands. And I'm sorry, federal and state lands, so public lands. I think public lands is a huge issue. I think it's something that we really need to be very thoughtful about how we use and manage our public lands. And this is something that's, I think, increasingly an important issue, is particularly as Idaho continues to grow, experience growth pressures, and as we continue to see, you know, other entities, other states challenge the whole idea of public lands, even though, you know, on the Republican side even, we see moves to expand federal protections of public lands here in Idaho. I think our public lands are to be cherished. I think they're one of the greatest resources and greatest assets of Idaho. I think that's one of the things that makes Idaho a very special place and unique place in the United States, is the abundance and accessibility of our public land. So I would want to make sure that we do everything we can to protect and preserve and cherish our public lands into the future,
but also
manage them responsibly, because you know, one thing that's clear is forest fires is becoming a major concern, not just you know, really in mountain towns everywhere and all over the country, and we see that year in and year out. We see our communities potentially threatened and potentially devastated by wildfire. So that's something that we need to get a handle on, and that includes and requires responsible management of our public lands, and that's something that I would definitely focus on as governor.
So so you would preserve, I guess what I wanted to interject, you're comfortable with the percentage of public lands, you just want to have them managed more of a cooperative, you know, the state wants this and the feds want this. You don't feel like you want to release some of those lands back into private capital ownership, private ownership? Real quick, we've got like 15 seconds.
I think that would be very short-sighted and very irresponsible.
All right. Well, let that be the last word. Mayor Shelby Ronstadt, I appreciate so much your coming in, answering all these questions, even my interruptions. I appreciate it very much. Thanks, everybody, for being with us today. You know I appreciate all of you out there. Next week, as I have already told you, I get to talk with Tom Albertson, our superintendent right here at Lake Ponderay School District. So join in with us next week. You're always invited to the Speak Up table. Until then, this is Barbara saying, take care of yourselves, and may God bless you.
KU 96 CU 1450 KBFI.